This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into episode number 140 of the Ridge Hunter Outdoors podcast. This week, we're talking to Ethan Stubbs. You guys might remember him from episode number 97, almost a year ago to the date. He was on with us at the beginning of last October. At that time, he was still working with Bill Winke on his Hoyt's Bowhunting Whitetails show. Now, he is doing his own thing on his own YouTube channel, Ethan Stubbs, and he's working for the High Point Land Company full-time now, selling land up in Iowa, hunting ground and stuff like that. We got into a lot of different stuff, per usual, for us here on the podcast, but we talked about permission farms and hunting private ground and the different strategies that you can use, and we talked about kind of what he's looking to do with his channel and his show and how we're trying to bring value to people and all kinds of different stuff we got into on this episode. Trail camera stuff, of course. Like, we covered a ton of ground, and I think it was a great conversation, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. So let's get into it on episode number 140. This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. All right, man. Last time we talked was, it was just over a year ago, maybe. I think it was last year. You were basically running a camera, working with Bill on his Hoyt's Bowhunting Whitetail series, and I know you're off doing your own thing now, so let's back up a little bit. And when did you break off from that? Was it after last season ended? And then how did you kind of decide where you wanted to go from there?
Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't like a break off or anything.
Well, yeah, it sounded kind of harsh, but
yeah. No, it was, we both kind of decided like, hey, I do land sales, land real estate sales. Mm-hmm. And that takes up a ton of my time. Mm-hmm. And so it was just going to be hard to focus on, you know, being able to film Bill as consistently as what I needed to. And we still talk, you know, 3 or 4 times a week, and I still plan on helping him behind the camera a little bit this fall, mm-hmm. especially if I tag out.
Right.
I would say a lot of the kind of going off on my own, or, you know, it's something I've always wanted to do, but it really stemmed from me needing to dedicate more time to my land real estate business and continuing to grow that.
Yeah, for sure. So are you working with a company up there and you're.
Yeah. So I work for High Point Land Company.
Okay.
And I sell hunting farms basically all over the state of Iowa, Southern Iowa, Northeast Iowa. I don't discriminate. I'm willing to travel anywhere and then help anyone out.
Well, I think that's probably the way you have to be in that business, right?
Right. Yeah. And there's some guys that, you know, really stick to one county or two counties, and, you know, I guess if it works for them, it works for them. But, you know, I just like chasing deer all over the state. Mm-hmm. So, I enjoy traveling and seeing different areas and neighborhoods and meeting new people.
Yeah, for sure. We got a partner on the podcast that works for Midwest Farm and Land down here. And
yep.
We try to bring him on a couple times a year, and we'll talk about the market and stuff and what he's seeing and things like that. But how long have you been doing that now?
Yeah, so I'm basically coming up on 2 years now.
Okay.
I got done with school and got my real estate license, and then started doing the media work for High Point. Mm-hmm. And that's actually how I met Bill, was through them and through Midwest Whitetail. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, slowly worked my way from the media production into being a land agent. And I've been doing that for about, just over a year and a half, coming up on 2 years.
What kind of learning curve is there with doing something like that? Because obviously it's not traditional real estate, and I would imagine there would be one with that anyway. But did you go to school for... I mean, I think we probably talked about this last time, but what did you go to school for?
I went to school just for a general business degree.
Okay.
Really nothing to do with real estate. Obviously, you can take some business principles and,
sure,
you know, put put them into real estate. But it, the learning curve, you know, I'm still involved in, you know, I'm learning on every transaction. You learn something new and or a different way to do things. So, you know, there is a little bit of a learning curve. But I was, thankfully, I've surrounded myself with a bunch of really good guys that are willing to help me out and work with me. And so it's, that's made that a transition a breeze.
Yeah, that definitely helps. Did you start this, because you interned at Midwest Whitetail too, right?
Correct. I think that was 4 or 5 years ago now.
Okay.
4 years. Yeah. Cause I filmed Bill for 2 or 3 years. And so I filmed Jared Mills for a season when I was a Midwest Whitetail intern in 2020. Okay.
Yeah. We talked to Jared a few episodes ago, actually.
Oh, I got you. I think he actually mentioned something about that. You guys played baseball at the same school.
Yeah. It was pretty crazy. Like that. Him being way up there in Iowa, and I mean, I'm 2 hours from the place, and you just don't know a lot of people that went there, so that was kind of crazy, but he was a cool dude. I'm sure that was a pretty fun year, and obviously could stand to learn a lot from a guy like that, too.
Yeah, no, he's awesome, and I mean, we've continued to be really good friends. I mean, we talk all the time, and we actually went to Kentucky and hunted together this year.
Okay.
And then we hunted Nebraska turkeys with the Elevate Tree Stand guys last year, and so that's probably one of the most valuable things I got out of the internship was just, you know, was the relationship with Jared. And, you know, he's not only a good friend, but a really good role model and, someone that's always willing to help me out, you know, with anything a guy needs. So it's good to have guys like that, that are helping you out.
Yeah. It's all about relationships, right? Like it's not, everybody always says it's not what you know, it's who you know. And that goes for a lot of different things, you know?
Oh yeah.
It's nice to have those kind of people. And even especially, you know, just when you get into talking about hunting and deer hunting in general, like having somebody that you trust as well that you can bounce ideas off of or go through scenarios with, and like if you come up with certain problems or trying stuff, different stuff, you can bounce ideas off of them. Like it's nice to have those kind of people.
Oh, I know. I feel so fortunate. I mean, every deer hunting situation I could ever think of, I can either ask Jared Mills or Bill Winky.
Bill Winky.
And I mean, I can call them both at any time. And, you know, it's just like, holy smokes. I realize how lucky and fortunate I am to, you know, surrounded myself with those guys and, you know, be able to talk strategy with those guys. And, you know, it's just building great friendships more than anything. And, you know, trying to, you know, be a good person and just do the right thing. And that goes a long ways.
Yeah, that's one thing that, while there is, you know, some animosity or whatever throughout the hunting industry, and there's always those guys that no one really can get along with, there's so many people that we've met that you just become friends with, and you can kind of build that relationship around hunting, around the outdoors, and then, like, you end up making some of the best friends you've got. You know, it's that's one thing that's been cool about us doing the podcast is just meeting different people and getting to know them a little bit and things like that. It's something I really enjoy about the hunting industry.
Yeah. I mean, and at the end of the day, we all have the same passion, right? And, you know, you like to think we all have the same morals as well, whether that's the case or not. But when you can share a common passion with someone, you know, it makes conversations easy. Like, you know, doing this podcast, like, man, I can talk about hunting all day long.
Right.
And so can you, you know, so it makes the conversation pretty fluid. And, you know, one of my friends said it best. He's like, hunting is, what did he say? Something about, you know, just hunting is the common language between people. You know, you can come from all different walks of life.
It's a universal language for sure. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, whether you live in Georgia or New York or Iowa or California, you know, we can all, if you can talk about hunting, you can have a friend and a conversation for a long time.
That's something we talked about quite a bit too, is just because we've gone different places throughout the country and talked to people about like their situation, their properties and whatnot. And it's like, deer are still deer. They may be different ways to hunt them based on your terrain, or like if you're big woods out east or you're hunting the plains out in Kansas or something, but deer are still deer, and you can always, you know, find something to relate to, whether you're talking Northeast Iowa or Southwest Georgia, you know, I mean.
Yeah. And that's really why I like hunting whitetails, is because, I don't know, they're the most common deer species in the United States. Like you said, everyone's got them, you know, you can relate to a lot of different people. And it's just fun to implement different strategies in different parts of the country where you go and hunt.
Mm-hmm. So not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but is the goal to eventually be someone that, like you're talking about Jared and Bill being a big help to you, is that the goal eventually for you to be that person for somebody else and kind of maybe have that platform?
Yeah, I think, I think the platform comes with being able to help people.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of my goal, is I just want to be relatable and be able to help people become better deer hunters. That's my goal. And then, if the platform comes, it does, it comes. I'm not worried about that. And I don't want to force anything because, I'm a firm believer. If it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And, we're kind of working on God's timing. So there's, I don't know what the future has in store, but I know I love hunting more than anything. And I enjoy producing content.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of my plan, is just to continue to produce content and try to help people become better hunters. And if people see value in that and, want to continue to follow me and I grow and, have a platform or an audience, I'd be tickled pink and just, it'd be a dream come true.
Yeah. I think that's the stuff that comes through also, is if you actually have the passion for it and the love for it, you're going to build that follower base, and then right. people will enjoy the content, and you will be able to help people. And then you're building like a real following. And it's kind of similar to that relationships thing. Obviously you don't know all these people, but I mean, at some point they kind of know you. I mean,
right.
if they watch all your content and stuff, they kind of feel like they know you, at least if you're doing a good job. And I think that's a lot more valuable than somebody who does kind of do it the fake way. And like, maybe they're just a marketing guru or whatever. And I can think of a few examples of people that they get really popular like that. And some of them, I mean, it's already happened to in the last, it's been several years ago. One of them I'm thinking of, but as soon as something goes wrong or something bad happens, everybody's gone. Like, there's nothing left because you weren't honest and you weren't real about it in the first place. And I think that's a testament to, we were talking about Bill, what he's done. I mean, he built all that at Midwest Whitetail, just like you're talking about how you want to do it. And then he leaves. Yeah. I mean, he was off the map for like 2 years, basically.
Yep.
And he comes back, and now he's still got just a really solid following, and it's continuing to grow again. I mean, that's a testament to doing it the way you're talking about.
Yeah, and one thing I want to implement from Bill's channel is, not just growing an audience, but growing a community of people who are going to come back and be able to conversate about deer and go into these higher level conversations about, passing deer or growing deer or farm management or, whether I film my stuff or not, I'm still going to be out there doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to have a good community of guys that, one, enjoy the content that I'm producing, and two, that are, high level bow hunters that have the same passion and ethics that I do.
Mm-hmm. So was it when you kind of decided to, you needed some more time to focus on your land sales and stuff, did you know right away that you were going to keep filming and producing your own content? Like, was that always kind of your plan?
I don't know. I just know I really enjoy producing content. Like, that's why I got into Midwest Whitetail. Used to film my hunts with my mom's camera when I was in, freshman in high school. And so just because I wasn't filming for someone else, I was like, I'm going to continue that, because that's my passion, is just, filming, producing stuff. And a lot of guys film their stuff, but really hardly anyone actually edits it and post it on YouTube. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to just do half the job. I'm going to go through it. I'm going to edit it, put it on YouTube. So that way someday, you have a family or whatever, and I can go back there and watch myself documenting this whole, start to finish 2024 and 2025 and 2026,
right.
Every single year. I just think that's going to be really cool. And, that's kind of my style, is just being able to document the stuff to go back and look up and watch it over.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoy that production part of it too. And going in, it can be long hours sometimes, but when you get done the finished product and you feel like you've accomplished something, and
right.
it kind of all comes together, whether you ended up killing something or not, or like, depending on how the hunt was, you can still like go in and do the work and make the end product something worth something of value, whether you shot something or not, right? So I enjoy that part of the production side of it, and like the voiceovers and things like that, and just all the little edits that go into making something that people want to watch. I think it's a lot of fun. So I get that for sure. And you're kind of doing that on your own channel now. Is your YouTube channel Ethan Stubbs? Is it just Ethan Stubbs?
Yeah, it's my name.
Okay, that's what I thought. And yeah, you're doing pretty good so far from what I've seen. If you guys are looking for your own piece of ground to manage and hunt, Rodney Hawkins is a guy you need to talk to. He grew up hunting and fishing in Southern Illinois, and he's now putting that love for the outdoors into selling recreational properties as a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. Midwest Farm and Land isn't your average real estate company. They do residential properties, but they also do a ton of recreational property sales as well. Rodney himself sold over $7 million worth of properties last year alone. They've got agents like him all over Illinois, so they're really a local company with a national reach. For more info on them, what might be available, or even getting your property listed if you're looking to get rid of one and maybe get into something else, you can contact Rodney directly at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. He's also got his own company called RG Outdoors that currently has products from Radix Hunting, Tacticam Trail Cameras, Camo Dust, and he's adding new stuff all the time. So if you're interested in any of that, go over to their Facebook page, RG Outdoors. Email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com. Or again, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been really proud of the how well it's done. You know, I've only posted, I don't know, 10 or 15 videos. I'm going to produce basically every hunt this fall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just kind of like in a daily blog format. And going back to your last question, it's like, man, I've spent the last 4 or 5 years of my life learning and perfecting this craft. Mm-hmm. And I've just been doing it for someone else. And I'm like, well, geez, that'd be kind of a waste of time if I didn't actually try it for myself,
right,
you know, and bet on yourself. And so that's another thing. I was like, you know what, I'm going to bet on myself and just try it. I mean, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I'm still going to go hunting, but you know, I think it's cool. Like I said, just to be able to have that stuff. And, yeah, some of my videos have done well. I did a first time food plot series this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And basically just went through the first time I've ever planted a food plot on a permission farm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, basically from taking it from start to finished product. And, that was kind of my off season series. And then now I just am going to have, like I said, a daily blog or, you know, a few days of hunts stacked on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be like my quest for my 2024 deer. It just won't have any cool name or anything.
Right. Right. No, that's fair. So are you hunting mostly like permission properties? Are you hunting some family ground or anything, or do you have a farm that you own now that you're hunting, or what's that look like for you this year?
Yeah. So I have a lease, and then I have a few other permission properties.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wanted to, I don't know, just, I wanted to broaden my, last year I had one buck to hunt, and I just kind of drove myself crazy.
Yeah.
And so this year I'm like, okay, I need to diversify the properties I'm able to have access on to hunt more than one deer, to be able to spread access around.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I have two or three permission farms and then a lease. The lease is really the only property that I have exclusive access to. The permission ground, obviously, really anyone can get permission on. So my family doesn't own any ground. I don't own any ground yet. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that changes here like sometime this year.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm trying to find a property right now, you know, 30 to 60 acres somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just trying to find the right piece and something, you know, you can make money on and
right. Try to get the ball rolling.
Right. That's what I want to do.
Yeah, for sure. So the lease is definitely nice because I assume like, I guess it depends on the lease. Do they allow you to do anything with that as far as food plots or anything like that goes?
They do. They have kind of a unique farming operation. So a lot of the work ground I don't mess with just because mm-hmm. they have like some, I don't know if it's organic,
okay.
But I just don't want to mess that up for them.
Right, right.
And so, but there are some spots to where, you know, in the timber, you know, there's little openings
mm-hmm.
to where I could, you know, so I've done that. I did the poor man plot this year where I just went in and seeded brassicas and fertilized and, that turned out really well. So that's kind of the extent of my food plot on my lease. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe if they ever go back to conventional or, you know, we could work out some sort of an agreement with that guy.
Right. You mentioned the permission property is kind of like anybody can get permission to hunt it. That's something that I've ran into sometimes on some permission pieces. It's really, I mean, it might as well be public ground in some places, right?
Like sometimes it's worse. Yeah.
It can be for sure. Cause I mean, a lot of times there's not as many acres, so you can't get away from anybody. And then
that's right.
Everybody thinks it's their own spot or whatever. We've talked about that before with using, cause a lot of times on permission properties, you can't do anything with them. Like, on one piece that I've got permission to hunt on, I broadcast into their standing corn or standing beans, mm-hmm. depending on what they've got, obviously, that year. But that's about the extent of what I can do as far as, right. like, habitat improvements or food plots or anything like that. So you can't do much. So
right.
I try to, as much as possible, take some of those strategies that guys are using to be successful on public ground and implement those on those permission properties, because I think that can be really beneficial. Because like you said, I mean, sometimes it's worse than public ground, so you got to get a little creative.
Right, and that's kind of the funny thing too. It's like, if you're like me, we watch deer management videos all the time, and that's what mm-hmm. that's what you want to do. And then it's like, man, how do I implement this on the property I actually hunt?
Mm-hmm.
And it's so tough to be able to. Because for one, you're probably planting a food plot for someone else to hunt over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this year I was just, I'm like, I got to wipe my mind free of that. You know, I just want to see if I can grow something. And
yep.
it makes for fun hunting when you can see 25 deer a night.
Oh, yeah.
And they're coming to you. You're not just, you know, shooting them as they're passed by. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely something I'm going to continue to use going forward. And like I said, hopefully have my own property here at this time next year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just continuing to, you know, work on the deer management side of things as well.
Yeah, that's where it gets really fun, I think, is because like you said, we watch all these videos of guys doing it. And I've the most ground that I can actually mess with like that, we've got a little 10-acre piece that I can do pretty much whatever I want on. And there's some ground around it that kind of trying working on getting, hopefully maybe at least get a lease on it and then maybe right. potentially buy it in the future, just so I can do some more of that kind of stuff. Some of the guys on the team have, you know, like Nate has 100 acres that he gets to mess with, and it's a lot of fun just, you know, game planning with him on what he's doing and talking to him about that and helping him out. So if you can get your hands on your own piece of property, then, I mean, it gets really fun at that point, I think. For guys like us, I mean, there's some people who probably don't want that, and they don't want the added stress maybe of having to worry about it. They just want to go into a permission farm and sit in a tree and hope something comes by, or they want to go to public. But for me, mm-hmm. it sounds like where you're coming from too, that's kind of the ultimate goal, is to have something that you can really put your fingerprint on and improve it for, and not just deer, but wildlife in general.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I like turkey hunting too. And so it, mm-hmm. like you said, it's just being able to improve a property and improve the value and kind of reap the rewards when you do go to sell it. It's like, that's what a guy's after. At least that's what I'm after.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the coolest thing a guy can do. And, you know, there's been a lot of people who have done that and have done really well at it.
Mm-hmm. And so did you guys, you mentioned turkey hunting there, and you said you guys went out to Nebraska this year. Did you do any good out there?
Yeah, Jared killed one the second day of the season with his bow. And then Josh Sparks and myself actually went back out there to a different farm the opening weekend of gun season, and we doubled up. And so that was a really fun hunt. Mm-hmm. There are so many turkeys in that neck of the woods. It's awesome. It's my favorite trip of the year.
Yeah, I got a buddy that goes out, and they do public land stuff out there in Nebraska. And mm-hmm. It was either this year or last year they didn't have much luck. But in years past, they've just talked about how crazy it is as far as the birds go, and then it's so much different terrain from what we're used to. So I'm sure that's a cool experience just to get out there and do something a little different.
Yeah. It's like kind of box canyon country where we're hunting.
Mm-hmm.
There are some big ag fields, but all the turkeys are obviously down in the canyons, and mm-hmm. it's kind of like, you know, I don't know if they're true Merriams or not, if they're a mix between Merriams and Rios and probably some Eastern even.
Right. Right.
But, you know, we have a blast. We've been doing that trip ever since my intern year at Midwest Whitetail. And
awesome.
Yeah, like I said, that's one of my favorite trips of the year.
What about down in Kentucky? June, Jared doing good down there?
No, we did not do any good. We didn't have any good encounters or anything.
Were you hunting?
We hunted hard.
Private ground down there.
Yeah, we have a really good friend that lives down there that invited us down, and he had some permission farms for us there. But mm-hmm. it's just when you're hunting early season in Kentucky, it's just tough. There's pressure, and then there's. Mm-hmm. I sat next to an oak tree the one day, and it sounded like it was raining. Could just drop an acorns right. that fast, and the conditions are just tough because it's hot and the deer don't want to move until midnight, and mm-hmm. You know, it really takes the perfect situation to get one killed there.
Yeah, it's very concentrated on the movement, and if you're not right there in them, you're pretty much not seeing anything.
Right, and I just enjoy hunting new territory. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fun. It was pretty similar in terrain wise. The difference was the amount of property owners and how the tracks are split up. You know, what's mm-hmm. one tract in Northeast Iowa was seven tracks down there. And yeah. it's like, and I don't know how you guys get any deer to maturity down here, but, there obviously are some giants there, and,
yep.
It was still a fun time.
Well, we did some work on a couple farms. One of them was Western Kentucky, and one of them was like not quite southeastern, but it was very deep South Kentucky, like almost to Tennessee. And mm-hmm. the difference in terrain between the two was pretty crazy. One of them obviously was more outside of the Appalachians and very, very rugged country in parts of it. And then yep. the other one it looks a lot more like what we're used to here. And yeah, just like you said, it's like, how do you, because there's so much pressure, and then how do you ever get a big buck around here? But the guys that I work for send me pictures, you know, there's some slobs down there in places.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's my buddy shoots 160 incher every year. And I mean, there's big deer. I think there was like a 240 that got killed with a crossbow this year. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it's just, I think you gotta, like we said, you gotta have the perfect situation. And that goes for any early season hunt, really anywhere.
Yeah.
Obviously, when the deer aren't rutting, it's either going to take a really big cold front or a crazy good green plot, you know, with a cold front. I don't know what it's going to take, but there's got to be some things that line up to go in your favor.
Yeah, no doubt. It could be a little bit similar to some of those rut hunts where, like, you're either in the deer or you're not. Like, it's just a ghost town.
Oh, yeah.
Like that, you know, latter part of the first week of November, if you're not in the does, or you're like, if they're not there, or they've already been through and checked on those does, they're just not there. You're not gonna see anything. Very similar right. down there. If you're not either close to where they're wanting to bed, or like you said, get a cold front coming in, and you've got a good green food source, like high pressure day or something, it's gonna be really tough. But it is exciting to go down there early, I'm sure, and be able to hunt before a lot of people can even get out there, right?
Yeah, it's just fun to be in the tree. I mean, it's September 1st is, I don't know, you wait all summer on cameras, and it's like mm-hmm. you're just itching at the bit. And so even if you don't even see a deer, just to be sitting in a tree stand and, you know, feel like you're hunting again, that's worth it to me.
Yeah, and that's a situation too where, especially if you're filming, it's good to get down there probably early and knock the rust off, because, like, inevitably for me, the first time I go out, I forget something. Like the first hunt of the year is usually a crap show.
Every time. Yeah.
So it's good to have somewhere you could go early and knock the rust off of that too.
And not only that, but especially when you're doing hanging hunts.
Oh yeah.
Like the first day I got in there, I think I forgot two of my straps. So I was hunting three sticks and one strap on my stand, mm-hmm. which it's just
good,
like,
thing you're not
man.
A very big guy. That could have been sketchy.
Yeah. So I'm like, man, this is why you come here and knock the rust off. Because,
exactly.
you know, when you're hunting Iowa in November, it's like you do not want to be having these mishaps then.
Yeah, no joke. We got a couple guys that I wouldn't even let put one foot in a stand with only one strap on it.
Yeah, I had an eighter, which helped me get probably 14 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
But the second day, I'm like, hey, I can't forget those straps again. I got to get a little higher.
Right.
Especially when you have, you know, you look up at the stand and you have a camera arm and a backpack and a bow. It's like you have to be able to get high enough to yep. be able to move enough to produce a hunt.
Yeah, if you don't have just like dead, I mean, if you don't have really good cover, you better be up there a little bit with all that stuff and trying to be able to move to get a camera on them. That's an element that whether you're self-hemming or you have someone in the tree with you, because obviously that's just another body and more movement. It's something people I don't think realize the difficulty it adds if they've never done it. Our partners at Flambeau Outdoors have some of the best solutions in the industry for your decoy and storage needs. They're focused on innovation that matters, and they build their products to last. They're probably most known for their whitetail, waterfowl, and turkey decoys, and that's for good reason. They've got a lot of quality options at great price points in each category. The Boss Buck is a personal favorite of mine in their whitetail line, and I've been throwing their storm front mallards in front of duck blinds for years now. Don't sleep on their storage solutions either, though. Whether it's fishing tackle, firearms, ammo, or archery equipment, they've got you covered. They just stepped up their archery storage game, too, with the new Formula Bow Case. It might just be the best bow case on the market, and I'm really excited to use it this season and for years to come. Make the most of your time outdoors with Flambeau. Realism that gets results.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, last year I hunted with the cameraman a bunch with Carson and Alex on Bill's show, and that's at least four times harder. You can't even hunt the same trees that you would normally hunt. It's like, you know, I learned that lesson the hard way, and it's like, holy smokes, we were always getting busted, and I have enough cover for one guy and minimal movement, but when you have two guys and a camera arm and, you know, swinging around the tree, you literally cannot hunt the same trees you can hunt normally.
Nope. I actually was listening to, I think it was the Hunter podcast. David Blanton was on there, and he was talking about when they started filming and stuff. He said, it's one thing to find a killing tree, you know, like you walk out and you scout. Right. If you're going by yourself, you're like, that's the tree where I could sit in and kill a deer. It's another thing to find a filming tree, because they can be completely different, what you need, what you're looking for out of them. And it's unfortunate they can't always be the same. Every now and then you get lucky. Maybe you got a good, like a good pin oak or something that you can see out of, but it's still got some leaves and cover and you can get up in it, but it can be tough.
Yeah. Pin oaks are really nice. Like hard maples I found are really good because they have like branches everywhere and just something to break up your outline. And then obviously just really any oak tree is a good spot to be, just because they usually have, you know, crotches in the trunk, and you can kind of hide behind those. And there's a few different ways to get set up.
Yeah. If you can get something with even just a few branches that are a little lower, so it doesn't look like you're the only two big blobs sitting on the side of the tree, that helps a bunch.
So definitely.
I saw, I don't know if it was on Instagram or if it was on your YouTube, the buck you were hunting last year, I think it's the one you were talking about, kind of ran you ragged, right? The flyer buck?
Yeah, the flyer buck.
Yep. He's back this year?
He's still around. Yeah, he's still around. I think he's either, I was talking to the neighbor last night, either six or seven this year.
Yeah.
And has thrown his best rack by far. Mm-hmm. He still has his flyer, but he threw an 8-inch drop tine too on the same side as his flyer.
Yep.
And so he's just, you know, I saw him the other night. I was out scouting a few days before the season, just overlooking an alfalfa field, and he came out right at last light. And man, he's just impressive to look at, not necessarily from an antler perspective, but just his body. Mm-hmm. It looks like a bull out there. Just, you know, he was pushing other deer around and running other does and bucks off. And then he just gets out in the middle of an alfalfa field and lays down, you know? And he's been in the same 25 acres all summer, and even up until last week. I got him on trail camera two nights ago on the other side of the farm. Mm-hmm. So, but he, you know, he got super lazy this summer. I mean, I could go out basically seven nights a week and film him if I wanted to. And I mean, obviously I didn't. I don't want to put any more pressure on him than what he already has.
Right.
But you know, that's a fun deer to chase. He's definitely a cool buck.
That's interesting. You hear guys like Bill or like the Drurys of the world, they talk about when those deer get to, like, they get past five or six and they just become like lazy, for lack of a better word, and they can almost be easier to kill than a 4 or 5 year old buck. A lot of times they probably are, because I don't know if it's just they get to where they feel secure, they feel safe, they think they've got it made because they've done the same thing every year and like it's worked, and they've obviously they're still alive, or if it is just they get old and tired and they kind of stay in the same little block for a lot longer, and
I think it has a lot to do with just their comfortability, right? Like you kind of mentioned, they've he's been there for 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. You know, he's lived in the same spot. He hasn't gotten killed. I mean, he was close last year, but it just didn't work out. You know, I had him at 20 yards twice.
I remember seeing at least one of those.
Yeah. Well, I guess the other time was like 35, but, you know, nothing's bothered him. Nothing's killed him. He's comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then these other bucks, you know, these three and four year olds, they're actively searching for their home range all the time.
Right.
And they're willing to travel farther for does. They're willing to travel farther for, you know, food and really anything. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of the difference is, you know, you'll have a buck really core up when he's old because he's comfortable. Mm-hmm. And if you can hunt his fringe and get between him and his food, you wait for a cold front, you'll probably kill him.
Right. You got a really good chance at least.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's some guys like the Juries and Bills where they'll say, you know, like, hey, I had a better chance of seeing that deer than not, you know, whether or not I killed him that hunt, but you could go out there every single night and see that deer. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't experienced anything like that yet, but right. I'm hoping that this is the year to, you know, at least lay eyes on him more and kind of figure him out a little better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how many 6.5-year-old bucks have you hunted regularly?
Yeah, I think I probably killed two. Mm-hmm. Two or three different bucks that I would say were full maturity, you know, 5.5 or 6.5.
Right.
And what I always tell people is it's like a different animal. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Even hunting with Jared and hunting with Bill, you know, they've obviously hunted way longer than I, or, you know, mm-hmm. Jared has hunted 15 years longer than I have and Bill's 50, you know, but
right.
Those guys have seen it all and, mm-hmm. you know, just learning from their expertise and, you know, kind of taking the tactics they use when they're hunting these mature bucks and then implementing them into my own strategy. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting. It's just a different animal is what it is.
Yep, it is. And that's the thing too, when it comes to that, because like you said, you've killed maybe two or three and you're hunting this one. So that like, you just don't get as many experiences with that caliber of deer. So you have to, I think if you're smart, you have to go listen to the guys and talk to the guys that have done it for longer than you have, longer than we have, and learn from those guys and either learn from their successes or even better, their mistakes, and try right. to not do those things and repeat the things that made them successful. And that's how you start to figure them out a little faster. Because if not, I mean, let's say you hunt, especially like where we're at, we don't quite have the age structure that you guys do.
Right.
At least it doesn't seem like it. So you might hunt a 5.5-year-old buck once every 2 or 3 years. That's mm-hmm. not a large data set to build your knowledge base off of when it comes to hunting those kind of deer. So if you have those other people to learn from, I think that's how you do it.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what makes my channel unique too is, you know, a lot of these guys probably aren't going to learn from me, but they're going to learn with me.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm out there cutting my teeth just, you know, like a lot of guys are. And so that's part of the reason I wanted to make my channel is, you know, for young guys like myself and you and really anyone, it's like, okay, you can watch me. I'll make the mistakes for everyone. I don't care.
Yep.
You know, you guys can watch me and I'll talk about strategies from what I've known, the people I've met mm-hmm. and these, you guys can implement it into your hunts, however you want and, you know, continue to learn with me. You know, I think that's kind of the cool part and that's kind of what my overall goal for the channel is.
Yeah, that's a cool angle to come from too, because you're not going to see a ton of that probably. Most people either, and especially, I mean, your age up to my age, that, you know, mid to late 20s range, especially if they've got a camera in front of their face, they want to act like they know it all, whether they do that's or it. Not.
Yeah, and everyone thinks that they know it all, and it's just like, yeah. Man, I know that I don't know it all. You
that's,
know, it's
that's
like,
big right there, yeah.
Right. I've been blessed. I grew up in Northeast Iowa. I've killed, you know, 3 bucks that are in the 170-inch range, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I've killed some good deer, but it's like, man, I still have so much to learn, and I just want to continue to get better and better until I can become, like, the ultimate hunter. Mm-hmm. You know, just be as deadly as what Bill is or what Jared is.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, I just want people to learn with me, and so hopefully everyone can get to that that range, hopefully just not my neighbors.
Exactly. Right. Man, that like in all honesty, that's something that I struggle with putting deer on film or on camera, because I know there's certain people that know where I hunt, no matter how much I try to hide it or whatever, or like sharing trail camera pictures. And it's like, but it's kind of a necessary evil, I guess. If you're trying to produce a good show, you have to do that kind of stuff.
Right. And I kind of go back and forth on that as well. You know, I don't show every single deer that I have ever had on camera.
For sure.
But, you know, there are some deer that I'll show, and at the end of the day, I'm like, you know what? It's a wild animal. If he goes out to the road and gets hit by a car, or if he walks in front of the neighbor and the neighbor shoots him, like, I'm going to be happy for that guy, because one, he killed him. I wasn't even able to. And, you know, it's a wild animal. If it was, you know, if we had a penned up or something, it'd be different, but man, I can't control what that deer is going to do. So it's like, whether or not I post a picture of him on YouTube probably doesn't have a lot of impact on if he gets killed or not.
I mean, one thing I do worry about, and we have, there's pockets of it around here where we have more issues with it, is guys poaching deer. So like, that's when I, if I'm concerned about it, it's usually that. Cause like you said, if the deer goes to the neighbor's property and they kill it, like, I'm going to be happy for them. I have a good relationship with some of the neighbors that we have, and some of them I just don't know that well, but the ones I do, like, we'll share pictures and kind of tell each other what we've seen, what's been going on. And if they happen to kill one of the deer I'm after, I mean, that's great. I think a lot of people run into the issue as they start calling them their deer, like, that's my deer or whatever. Like, no, he was on your property twice, you know, that doesn't make him your deer. It's not like a tree that's grown out of your ground, but that seems to be a big thing in the hunting world, is people thinking they own a deer, and it's just like you said, it's a wild animal.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I've gone away from being scared to show. Like I said, I don't show every deer. I mean, I'm full and honest about that, but a lot of the bucks where it's like, I'm like, okay, I don't own that deer. I think it's cool that he's a 6.5-year-old buck, and I think people can learn from this chase of me hunting him. I think that's kind of the best part.
Yeah, and it also builds the interest too, because you can tell people all day long that you're hunting a 5.5 or 6.5-year-old deer, and that's great. But if you don't ever actually show them, you know, a trail camera picture or footage of him, then why would they keep coming back and watching, you know? And then they're not gonna learn anything, because they're not watching. So it's, you definitely have to do it to some extent.
For sure. I mean, yeah, people are visual, especially on YouTube, of the clickbait era. People want to see a deer in a thumbnail, you know, preferably dead, but if not dead, you know, at least a big one on camera or something. Otherwise, you really, this isn't right. But if you're not showing big deer, you lose all credibility from a lot of guys.
For sure.
It doesn't, just because you have big deer to hunt means that there's big deer on your property, not that you're a good hunter.
Exactly.
And so that's kind of where I'm at with that.
I know a lot of people who have a lot of big deer that they never kill, but they could get a lot of footage. But I'm the same way. If I see a thumbnail, and usually just mostly because of time, if it's not somebody I know, like, it won't get me to click it unless it's just a really big deer or something, or I've heard about it, you know. But like, if it's somebody I know, like you or Jared or Bill or whatever, and I see a nice deer, I'm going to watch that video. Because even if they don't kill it, I like watching the deer and watching the way they act and their behaviors and stuff and their body language and all that. It's just fun to watch whitetails do what they do undisturbed and sometimes disturbed. You know, it happens occasionally. But I think there's still a large amount of people that are the same way. They just like watching deer, whether you end up killing them or not.
Yeah, and that's kind of the approach I'm taking on my channel. Like, I don't want to overproduce any of the stuff. I think deer footage of like 4K, 120 frames per second, slow motion deer footage is the coolest thing ever. You know, I'm maybe weird in that, like, slow motion, but, you know, I think that stuff is cool. And so that's what I want to watch. So that's probably what I'm going to produce. You know, obviously if I'm receptive to feedback, if the audience likes, you know, a more produced hunt or whatever, I'm fully capable of doing that. But, like you said, I just like watching deer, and I think people get a kick out of feeling like they're in the tree with you.
That's a big thing. And if it wasn't something that you enjoyed watching or that you wanted to do, it wouldn't be as good either. Like, if you were trying to get video or produce something that you were doing it just because you thought that's what the audience wanted and not necessarily because you wanted to do it, or at least some combination, it wouldn't be as good.
And that's how people get burnt out too, is means doing stuff that, you know, they're really not 100% in on. And, you know, I don't want to get to that point. Hunting is what my number one passion and what I enjoy doing more than anything. You know, I don't want to ever make it into something to where it's less enjoyable than what it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. That's something to what you talked about, like not being overproduced or anything. I do think there's some people out there that they get great footage, but then they overproduce the episodes or the show. And some people, mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people like that. It's not for me. And mm-hmm. I kind of try to find some balance, like, and you're doing the same thing from what we've talked about. You want to have some production value, but not too much. And it's very similar to also what Jared's doing. And I think what people like about what he's doing, he could be a National Geographic filmmaker, you know, like some of the video gets. But people enjoy watching that. Just pretty raw, not incredibly edited video of those bucks doing what they're doing. Like that video he had of that slow motion video of that buck working a scrape the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Unreal. I mean, that's kind of the kind of footage that you're hoping to get when you go out there.
Yeah, I don't know did you guys talk anything about it, the sense that he produced?
He hadn't released him yet. He mentioned that he was getting ready to. So no, we didn't mm-hmm. get into it too much.
Yeah, we've been working, or I guess not we. He's been working on that for a while. He gave me some of those scents to try, and I've been using those all season. So that's mm-hmm. when he sent me that video, I was like, dude, that's like the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's so
especially
cool.
For a marketing perspective for a deer scent company.
Yeah,
it's like, dude, what else? I mean, that's everything you need is right there.
Uh huh. It'd be hard to beat that. If you guys plant food plots and you don't know who Grandpa Ray Outdoors is, you need to look him up. They specialize in providing the best nutrition for white-tailed deer on your property, starting with the soil. They've got a full line of high-quality food plot seed and plant foods with over 14 different food plot blends to choose from. You won't have any trouble finding what you're looking for. They've got fall and spring blends, corn and beans, switchgrass, liquid fertilizer, soil test kits, you name it. When it comes to planting, they've got it. They're not just about selling their products, though. They were started in 2015. John, the owner, has been in the business since 1991. So with that knowledge that he's acquired, he's going to be able to answer any questions you have about what blends would be best for your specific property. That way you can achieve the best results possible. Like us, John and his team don't believe in a cookie-cutter approach to wildlife nutrition. They're going to treat you and your situation individually. We've used tons of their seed on client properties, on our own properties, and the results have always been as good, if not better, than advertised. That's why we partnered with them in the first place. If you want to, go to GrandpaRayOutdoors.com, use the discount code RHOPODCAST, that's all lowercase, no space, and you get 5% off your entire order there. You guys need to go check them out if you care about getting the most bang for your buck when it comes to your food plots. I'm excited about seeing what's going to come out of that for him, too, and his year this year, and yours, too, because you got that flyer buck back. You got anything else on, is he on one of your permission farms, or is he on that lease?
He's on my lease.
Okay, so that's even better then.
Yeah. So he's where I can hunt him. He's cored up pretty hard right now. The funny thing is I've only had one picture of him since August 19th.
Mm-hmm.
And I go out there the other day and I just see him with my eyes, you know? And mm-hmm. so it's like, man, that deer is just, I don't know if he's smart or not, but seems like he is. You know?
Right,
it's like,
right.
Dude, this deer's loving me.
Yep.
And so I don't know if he's got me patterned. And so I'm going to really dig deep in the bag this year and change up my entrance and exit,
mm-hmm.
You know, really make sure that I'm not putting any pressure on him when I don't need to be. And, you know, just go capitalize on him on a cold front mm-hmm. and hopefully shoot him over a scrape is kind of what my plan is.
Yeah. I was talking about, we talk about this a lot, maybe too much for some people, but I always think it's interesting. And I'm pretty sure we just talked about it with Steve Shirk on our last episode, but it's the trail camera thing is, mm-hmm. I always find it more valuable the year over year trail camera data than like the live, like in real time stuff that I'm getting, because there's been so many times where either I have gone without having pictures of anything and I end up seeing a nice deer, or mm-hmm. I just wait and wait and wait till I get a picture and then I never do, or I get one or two pictures and then I don't get them again and it's too late, like I've missed that window. I think it's an easy trap to fall into for some people to just wait till you get a deer on camera. Because when you think about it, that camera's only facing one direction and it can only see so much. The deer could literally walk right behind the camera, be in bow range of your stand, and you'd never know it was there if you were just going off your cameras.
Oh, yeah. And cell cameras have made people so lazy, too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's like, man, you have got to get out there and you have got to hunt. You still have to scout. I mean, like we've talked, you kind of talked about this earlier on the podcast. If you're waiting for the deer to show up on your camera, you're already too late.
Yeah.
It's like, well, he's already gone, you know?
Exactly.
So it's like, I mean, you don't have to hunt every day, but you need to hunt, you know, seven of the best days of the year. Wait for a big rise in barometric pressure and a drop in temperature and go sit your best stand during the last week, October through November 20th.
Yep.
You know, it's like you pick your days wisely. You'll harvest a mature buck every year, but you still have to put the time in. You can't just rely on cell cameras to, you know, spoon feed you all the information that you need.
Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, just what you said, even if it's not a great day and you go out and you sit something that's maybe an observation stand or like overlooking a big food source where you know you can get in and get out pretty solid without messing anything up, and you're still giving yourself a chance. The buck that Dusty killed last night was like, he texted me, we were going out and he was telling me where he was going to sit, and he said, I'm going to go sit on this bean field, kind of an observation sit for, he was basically scouting for his son for this weekend. It's youth season in Illinois. And then he ends up killing a really, really nice five-year-old buck on what was supposed to be just an observation sit. So you just never know, too. I mean,
yeah,
just being out there. And that was, the deer walked in front of, hit one of his cameras on the way out, and it was the first daylight picture he had of him this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just it. I mean, a lot of times you can kind of take the strategy of, hey, I'm going to go be the camera.
Exactly.
And when you can go on an observation sit, that's always the easiest option, is to like, If you're struggling with, hey, I don't know how to approach this new farm, or I don't know how to approach this year, just go somewhere and get 18 feet up in a tree where you can see the farm, you know, and just watch. Don't even bring your bow with you. I mean, obviously bring it with you.
Right.
But don't take the mentality that, hey, I'm going to kill something tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Just go in there and watch. And then it's like the opposite of walk back shooting your bow, right? So you start way deep and then you kind of slowly just work your way in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, maybe next time you move 100 yards, and then next time you move another 100 yards, and then you go hunt the fringe, and then you find the bedding area, and then you hunt the, you know, the transition from the bedding to food. You know, you just got to be so careful, because you could just dive in there and blow everything out. But that's just, in my opinion, that's not the way to harvest mature bucks.
Yeah. We were, me and a couple of the guys were talking about this recently, because I forget who the guy even was now. I can't remember his name, which is probably not great, but he just killed a really nice deer, and they, I don't know, they sent a TikTok of him talking about how he did it. And I guess it was, he's one of these guys that's like super ultra aggressive and goes in tight to their bedding. And
is that that Whitetail Strategies guy?
Maybe. He had like 19 cameras on this little 15 acre patch or something.
I think that's what story. It was.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, and that's the thing about hunting too. And I mean, this is the disclaimers, like there's never a never in hunting, right?
Exactly.
It's not like,
yes.
I mean, what works for some guys isn't going to work for other guys. And what works for other guys isn't going to work for, you know, so it's like, you got to do what works for you. There's so much education out there. Just find a guy you like and try to implement their strategy, but also use the knowledge that you have. And, you know, cause there's never, it's a wild animal. Like we've said, there's never a rule that says, hey, this deer has to do this.
There's so much nuance to it. And I'm not saying that guy is this way, because I don't know that he is. I really didn't know him before that. But the issue is, and the disservice that I think happens, a lot of guys will do it this way and they'll tell you like it is the way and you have to do it this way every time. And
yeah.
I mean, we said earlier, deer are deer, but still your property may not set up to do it that way. We were talking about that guy specific, or that situation specifically, and you have to have so many things go right to be able to use that kind of super aggressive strategy. And it's what a lot of public guys do, I think. But in that case, or in the case, even if you're private land, you have to have plenty of area to find enough bedding where you think that buck's bedding, because he's not going to bed in the same place all the time. So you have to have enough place, enough acreage to where you think you can find multiple beds of that deer, and then be able to get in there without letting him know that you're there. And then on top of that, you have to have another buck to go hunt, because there's a good chance you're going to blow that one up. And then if you would have done that on that deer last year, I mean, what are you going to do? Right.
Right. Yeah. It's like, you don't have another deer to hunt. You got to
go.
I mean, I could have went and hunted public somewhere and, you know, found something, but yeah, like that guy, that strategy has obviously worked for that dude. He's killed a bunch of big deer, you know, and I mean, if that's what works for you, do it. You know, sure. I think like you said, there's nuance to everything, but if you're listening to this and you have a strategy that has worked for you, don't listen to what anyone else says. Just continue to do it. Mm-hmm. And you know, you'll continue to be successful because each property is a little different. Each county, state, you know, whatever is a way different. And so you just have to use what works best for you and your situation.
I actually think it might have been Bill I heard say this. It was either him or one of the juries. Again, I go back to those guys. But they were talking to Don Kiske, I think, and they said something like, man, you got to be one of the best whitetail hunters out there. And he told them, like, well, I'm the best at hunting my property. Like,
right.
It's just what you're talking about. If you've got something that works for you on your specific property, then why would you do anything else?
Change it.
Exactly. Yeah. If it's not broke, don't fix it kind of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, there's so many guys you'll never hear about that are killing, you know, Boone and Crockett class deer every single year that probably don't listen to any YouTube videos, that don't take any advice from anyone. Mm-hmm. They just have a killing tree and they're able to go in there. And like you said, they're effective at hunting their property.
Yep.
And that's what you got to be. At the end of the day, you have to be effective at hunting the ground that you have access to.
There's probably a decent number of people who are doing that on purpose, but by accident, you know what I mean? Like, they don't even realize that their access is rock solid on the way in and out. It just happens to be the easiest way to get to a tree that maybe sets up.
That's right.
Maybe it sets up on a saddle and they hunt it during the rut for 3 or 4 days with the right wind. And then they kill a big buck there every year. And like, they know that's what works. They may not even realize like why it's working. But it is, and like you said, it could be a guy that doesn't watch anything and listen to anybody else, but they do it, and they kill big deer every year. So if you got something that's working, don't let anybody change your mind.
Yeah, and I fall victim to this every single year, but, man, this is not rocket science.
Right.
It's whitetail hunting. You know, it's like we overcomplicate this, you know, 10 times what it needs to be.
Yes.
You know, so many guys are worried about what buck bedding, where buck bedding, where doe bedding. It's like, you know, just go learn, go mess it up, go try, obviously take calculated risk, but it's like, man, this is not rocket science. You can go out there and figure it out. Really, anyone can.
Mm-hmm. And it's what you were talking about when we were talking about observation sits too. It's, you can do preseason, postseason, summer scouting and all that. You can put up trail cameras, but until you get out there and you actually put eyes on the deer and the property, like that's how you really figure it out.
Yeah, because not only is every property different, but every deer's personality is different.
Mm-hmm.
So where, you know, how they interact. Like, I have one deer that is a giant. He won't hit a scrape. He won't even look at another buck. And then I have the flyer buck, you know, who's a solid deer, and he'll run any deer in that country out of the county. And so it's just like, you know, from deer to deer, it's pretty funny.
That's an interesting thing, too, is it's a lot of times it seems like, and I don't know if this has been your experience, but the deer that maybe go to 150 inches and it's as big as they ever get, or maybe 125, 130 inch 8-point, they're like the big bully buck. And then you get these giant 180 plus deer that don't have a scar on them. Their ears aren't torn up. It doesn't look like they ever did any fighting. And I think a lot of the theory around that is the bucks that are the big bullies and mean, they're probably moving so much and they're spending so much energy fighting that by the time the off season rolls around, anything that they're eating is just going back into replenishing their body fat and their reserves and all that, as opposed to the deer that's kind of that personality. He's a lover, not a fighter, and he's just kind of doing his own thing. Now, he's not as worn down by the end of the season, so he's getting more excess nutrition that's maybe going into his headgear. I don't know if you've seen that, but it does. At least where we're at, that kind of seems to be true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think a lot of big antler growth comes from post-rut nutrition. Like like you said, I think it has to do with, you know, how harsh was the winter, right? Is there a bunch of acorns this year? Is there a lot of food in the area that you're hunting?
Yep.
Lee Lukoski actually put me onto that. He was, you know, I was filming him on a hunt in Montana, and we talked about it, and he's like, man, you know, they feed analogics, which I understand not everyone's going to be able to do that.
Right.
But that post-rut nutrition is so key in being able to have these deer, you know, put the right nutrients into their reserves, into their body, into their antlers that they need, you know, to reach their full genetic potential.
Yeah. It's the way I understand it is they have to have obviously a certain amount for their body, and they have nutritional needs that they need to just be a healthy deer. And then anything in excess is what's going to help them achieve their genetic potential or their antler potential. So once they hit that certain point, it's not like they're going to stop eating or stop gaining nutrition. It's just going to go from filling their baseline needs to now it's putting on extra body weight and extra antler growth. And definitely, like you said, that post rut, cause that's when they're worn down. And if you have like we had this year, if you have a wet spring where you have a lot of extra browse, I think that makes a huge difference. I think, at least
that's
for me,
that's what people say all the time out, like even in Western, like in Colorado and Wyoming, you know, if they have a lot of rain, you know, their elk are going to grow their best rack, and, you know, mule deer are the same way. And I've seen that for whitetails. This is the best growing year I've ever seen in my, I mean, even Don Higgins says that this is the best growing year he's ever even seen. And it's, I think it has to do with one, we had a really, you know, mild winter, at least we did for what we're used to. There's more food plots. There's more nutrition than there ever has been.
Yeah, no doubt.
And then we had a really wet spring. And so it's kind of the perfect storm. I have bucks throwing kickers and stickers. And, you know, I had one buck that probably grew 70 inches and from year to year.
That, yeah, that's crazy.
It's like, holy smokes. You know, this is the best year I've ever seen.
I mean, especially if you just compare this year to last year, it was so dry for most of the year last year that we had bucks that were very similar rack to what they were the previous year, like even 3 to 4 year olds, 4 to 5 year olds. Now this year, I mean, I've got one buck in particular that he was 2.5 last year. He was maybe, I don't know if he would have went 120 inches, but close to it as a 10 pointer. And now this year he's a mainframe 6x7 with a kicker off of one of his twos. And I don't know, he'll go probably 140 inches as a 3 year old. Or better.
Some of these deer, it's hard to even track back to what deer they were last year because they grew so much.
If this deer didn't have the same like structure as far as if he wasn't a 10 pointer last year, like he didn't have the same structure as far as his twos and threes and like his main beams, how would you know it was the same deer? You know, it's crazy.
That's right. Yeah. I have one deer that I'm struggling to find out. It's like, man, I don't know what deer this is, but I have, you know, two suspects, but I don't know. It that part of the game is fun to me. I enjoy the, I know we said not to get overcomplicated and not make it, you know, too confusing, but I enjoy that part of it. You know, diving deep and really learning each deer and their personality and what they did last year. You know, that's fun to me.
And that's not something that if you get too deep into it, it's going to keep you from killing a buck per se. You know, it's just something that's, I find it interesting too, just to see, and you can, that way you can kind of keep track of what we're talking about too. If you didn't know, if you weren't keeping track of a deer year to year, how would you know that the jump was better this year than it was last year? Or
that's right.
And then on top of that, how would you know that this buck usually leaves the farm on October 15th or he usually shows up the first week of November and then he's here for a week and a half breeding does and then he's gone, right? Like that stuff is, that's actually where you can get it into it pretty deep and it can make you more successful, I think.
Definitely.
Well, definitely, man. We're about an hour here, so I'll let you get back to selling farms and stuff. I appreciate you jumping back on with us, man. And we'll say good luck this season. Hopefully, I'd love to see you kill that flyer buck. I think he's a really cool deer. And I, man, as much as big antler, those old deer, they get me going.
Yeah. And just the history I have with them. You know, I have both the sheds from last year and all the encounters. And so I'm hoping to finally, you know, catch up with him here, hopefully sometime this fall.
Well, let everybody know where they can keep up with you. That way, when you do put him down or that other big deer you're talking about, they can see all the pictures and all the video of it.
Yeah. So my YouTube is just Ethan Stubbs. And then Instagram is Ethan.Stubbs_, I think. And Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, it'll all be posted everywhere.
Awesome, man. Well, I'll link that stuff in the description too. And I will also put the last episode down there. So if people want a little more background on you, we got into last time a little bit more of your history and hunting and all that. So if they want to go listen to that, they can. But again, thanks for coming on, man, taking the time out of your day to do this. I really appreciate it. And we'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Stay safe and shoot straight.